Hi, buddy. Welcome to a Wednesday Sports Line, the Bulldog Hour. I'm Maury alongside, as always. Thank you to three. Handed off to our good friend Phil Bonatti's fine show behind the bench. The full 3 hours today, and then the Lakers about 15 minutes after that, 6:15, will get started in San Antonio. I was just talking to Jorge about this before we came up, that it was going to be an 8:30 local start time in San Antonio, and that's because ESPN wants the doubleheader, and they don't have a West Coast game, so they've got an early game. That's the Boston-Denver game, and then they had to push the Spurs and Lakers back at least an hour, if not two, to get that one in tonight, but it should be a good one. I guess LeBron and Luka are going to play, and I think that Wemby's going to play for San Antonio. I bring this up because both teams are coming off of back-to-backs now, or coming off of the first of the back-to-back. They both played last night, not against one another. But we'll tell you about that as part of the schedule and the rest of a very busy week, including 5 straight days of really important football, playoff-wise, in both college and the National Football League a little bit later on when I go over the schedule for both 1430 and 790, courtesy of Ed Dunkel and his fine business, Precision Civil Engineering. We talk about it every day. Planning, land surveying, civil engineering, landscape, architecture, construction management, all there under one roof. 449-4500 or precisieneng.net for more information. Again, when we go with the schedule, I'll tell you about the great fundraising that Ed does for the Lyles College of Engineering on campus at Fresno State. Jack Furtick with me on a Wednesday to talk basketball, coming off of the Bulldog win last night. I want to mention up front, before we get to that, the women are home tonight at 6:30 as they try to pick up a conference win against SJSU. So we will talk about that briefly, and I'll talk about it at length tomorrow because Matt Norville will start his usual Thursday visits with me beginning tomorrow. So if you can get out to SMC tonight for the 6:30 tip, I hope you do it. Otherwise, it is on the Mountain West Network. Before we get to Jack, our other lead dogs, want to spend some time with you. First, our friends at Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing, been in the Central Valley since 1981. Terrific local people. You see the avocado green and blue trucks all over the place. They allow me the time every day to tell you about the weather. If you need more information about all their services, give them a call, 825-533-7825, Lees, or go to the web at leesair.com. They also sponsor the Lees Air Hotline. That's how Jack will arrive on air. That is 559-320-1430. It's also how Phil not only brings up his guests, but callers from the general public. So mark that down, Lees Air Hotline, 559-320-1430. As far as the forecast goes, talking about it yesterday, if the sun breaks through the way it is right now, anyway, out there nicely, it means that our highs will usually get into the 60s, as was 64 yesterday, but it is going to cool off a little bit, particularly at night, starting not tonight, but tomorrow night. But the projection for today, with the low clouds and mainly sunshine now, is 59, and then we're looking at 55 with the lows after tonight at 36 and 35, and then 58 Saturday, 57 Sunday, 58 Monday, 60 Tuesday, and again in the 7 day, the lows in the 30s at that point. So the fog is ever present in the morning. There'll be a lot of those foggy mornings burning off the sunshine in the afternoon. If we get full sunshine, we might actually see the 60s more consistently. If we don't, we're going to find ourselves in the 50s. The other bottom line is, for the 10-day, we don't have, at least at the moment, any projection for rain. We've had a lot. I mentioned we have, right now, at least season to date, about double what we normally have, but we still need to continue to fill those reservoirs. Otherwise, it can be a long and difficult spring and summer, both residentially or, of course, for everybody in the farming industry. So we'll see what happens. But anyway, thanks, everybody, at Lee's, for allowing us the time to tell you about the weather. Again, leesair.com, 825-5337, 825-Lees, anything you need, Central Air Plumbing, Heating, or Roofing. The other reminder before I bring Jack up, comes courtesy of our great friends at the local KFCs in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. Right now, coming off the holidays, they feature the brand-new Zinger Chicken Sandwich. It is a crispy, hand-breaded chicken fillet seasoned just right and served hot on a toasted bun with cool, crisp lettuce and creamy sauce that should hit for you every craving. It's bold, it's spicy, and as always, it's finger-licking good. So whether you crave spice or just a great taste, the Zinger is what you'll want to try right now at the local KFCs. All Lee Zingers with the crunch you love from KFC. So jump on in to one of the KFCs in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. Pick up a Zinger sandwich today. And also, if you stop on in and you have a few minutes, tell them thanks for supporting athletics throughout this great valley of ours, doing a lot for us at the station and a lot for Fresno State and other sports across the valley. Pick up the sandwich and also keep in mind the special deals that are still there in place, including the Tuesday $10 eight-piece bucket. Still have the country fried steak for $5.99 on Wednesdays. The $4.99 pot pie is there as well. So a lot of great food at the local KFCs. Anyway, thanks to those local operators at KFC in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. Thanks to Ed Dunkel, Precision Civil Engineering, and thanks to our friends at Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing. And right now, we bring up our great friend and basketball analyst supreme and someone who's been on the air with me for over 30 years, I think it is. Pretty sure that's right. We'll find out about that. It is Jack Furtick. Jack, how you doing?
Doing fine. There you go. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. I think we're at the 31-year mark. Is that correct, Jack? I believe that's the case. I think that 2026 brings us from 95.
I'm not counting. I don't know. I got here in 95, so
yeah,
I guess that is 31 years.
Yeah. You're not counting, but my wife, who's – But my wife, who's younger than both of us, is counting every day to remind me how old I am. Okay, so, and
my wife, who's older than both of us, is counting. So,
hey, by the way, I wish you well. You have the other hip to get ready on Friday, right? Is that right?
Yeah, I do. I do. Actually, looking forward to it.
Well, I know that the first one went pretty well, and I do have to ask you, are you going to be okay for next week with us, or you don't know yet?
Oh, yeah. I'm not even staying in the hospital. They want to get you in and out. There's no forward round anymore. You're walking, and you're walking that day. So I'll be then.
I'll be at
the timeout club meeting Monday night.
Is that a hip replacement drive-through? Is that what we've got? Because if that's the case, then I'm more
excited. Basically, what it is. That's what it's going to be soon. Yeah, you have robots still.
Well, I've got the left hip, both knees, and the back. And the guys at Spock a long time ago, Jerry Dunklin said, "I wasn't the $6 million man. I was the $6 man." That's about what I'm worth. Patch me up. So we'll see. Like I've told you, Jack, I'm more like Old Yeller. I think it's time to take Old Yeller behind the barn and tell the kids that Old Yeller ran away, if you know what I mean.
Well, maybe just stay away from Christy Nome.
Yeah, well, yes, I saw Cowboy Barbie in her outfit today again, so I think it's well-advised for a variety, canine or otherwise, that's a well-advised piece of advice.
Well, I got an MRI a while ago, and when I went in, the guy looked at my name, see, your name's familiar. I think you put my kid through college.
There you go. By the way, And when we're talking about the other stuff, a terribly tragic day in Minnesota. We're well aware of it. And as we've said before, we try to stay on sport. But no question that that was a very, very unfortunate, tragic situation, whichever side of the political spectrum you're on. And I'm going to leave it at that because that is not our role. As you know, Jack, I used to host Political Talk. And as impassioned as sports fans are, they pale in comparison to the real big leagues, which is when you start to delve into the political angles, because that stokes the fires, as people know, like no other topic. That's why I mentioned that family gatherings, it was very quickly to the kids' table and positioning the car, making sure you never were the first one in the long driveway at my grandparents' house, because then everybody filled in behind you and you couldn't get away.
Yeah,
you made sure you positioned yourself right in front of the driveway, so that the front of your car was not blocked off, and so that when those conversations started and the one uncle went after the other uncle verbally, you said, you know what, I'm going to reenact a Formula One race of the 50s where the guys used to run to their car, jump in, and drive off. And that's probably the advice I should have kept for those years of political talk, too. All right, that having been said.
Well, I don't understand. No one ever changes anybody's mind anyway, so it's just – you know, it's just people, one guy vents, the other guy vents, and then you shake hands and have dinner.
Well, and you hope that's how it ends up. So, an Italian family, sometimes utensils are flying in between, but I get the premise. All right, now, as far as last night, now, you and I talked off-air before the game. I certainly mentioned this to Paul on Monday and Jackson yesterday. On the one hand, you can't call what happened last night a must-win, but on the other, going into that game, knowing that it was fundamentally almost a neutral site game, you were not going to have a tough crowd against you. You'll have maybe almost many of your fans there sometimes as they have there. A beat-up San Jose State team that hadn't won in conference either, and you were trying to build off of coming back from 16 down in Vegas with a chance to win, but you couldn't get it done, playing a very respectable game against a preseason favorite Utah State, and then having a game you should have won against Nevada get away. So you really needed to build on that with a win, Jack. They not only got the win, they got a win fairly comfortably. Was it everything they had to have? I'm not saying it's a sufficient condition, but was it a necessary condition to win last night?
Well, yeah, I think so, especially with as many guys, you know, as it were out for San Jose. But then remember, we had a couple guys out as well. So, you know, it's, you know, you want to play at full strength if you can. But if you can't, let's hope the other team's not at full strength. And that's what happened. And then I know all these, I got people saying, you know, why don't they shoot like that all the time at the beginning of the game? Well, I remember Tark saying once, because, you know, he gave his two guard the green light. He could shoot whenever. And we went to Colorado State, and Kendrick Brooks went 0 for 11. And one of the guys, you know, one of the reporters had said something to him afterwards about Kendrick going 0 for 11. You're going to say anything to him, or you're going to get into him. And Jerry said, yeah, do you really think he woke up this morning saying, I hope I miss 11 straight shots? You know, that's just the way it goes. And last night was terrific. Last night they get out, they make their first six shots. They finally miss one and get the rebound and hit a three after that. You know, yeah, wonderful if you could do it all the time. And I think they'd love to. But, you know, lucky it happened yesterday and got out to a big lead and really kept it the whole time.
Well, Jack, I think, you know, we talk about the macro and the micro so often. That was the macro, what happened last night, the overview. The micro was probably, and it's critically important, that you did this without Jake being the guy. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, if Jake went for 40 last night and Fresno State won the same way, I think there would be the argument, well, yeah, sure, your best offensive player had a big game.
Yep.
But in point
yep.
of fact, it was, and I don't want to call, you know, Shaq with the others. I'm not going to call them the others, because you and I have talked about Gorey, and we both feel that Gorey and Stickman have been the pleasant surprises for this team. But when guys like Douglas, guys like Foss, when they step up and they have the kind of games they've had or they had last night, it tells you if they can get that balanced scoring, and the word is consistency, if they can have the consistency, this team can be pretty good. But I will ask you, jury's still out whether you're going to have three key scorers or whether you're going to have a guy like Foss have a big first half and Douglas have a big second half. Too much to ask, or is that in their purview to do that consistently?
No, I think that's what you have with the team. I think one of the things that you have is the fact that if one guy's off, maybe the other guy can pick him up. And
right.
That's what happened yesterday, last night. You know, I mean, Foss, the first half was on fire, and second half didn't have the same thing, but Douglas took over. And, you know, Highbutter, there's so many times they're closing out so hard, he's getting a lot of layups because of it. You know, he gives a little shot fake, and everybody goes for that because he's such a good shooter, and he gets to the basket, and like I said before, he's very crafty around the basket, knows to throw it up high, off high and soft, off the glass, and he's getting a lot of either and ones or, you know, just layups. So, yeah, that's what you're looking for. Now, I think, after looking at the crowd, you know, I was watching the game on the Mountain West Network, it looked like there were more Fresno people there than there were San Jose people. You're not going to get the same thing Saturday. Saturday's a different story.
Well, yes, you're at Viejas up to 12,000 with 11,900 and some odd are against you at that point, right?
But you also have guys that played 55 minutes. because it was a triple overtime game,
right.
And you hope it took something out of them. I mean, that was a heck of a game. I watched it after, I got home from the Bulldogs game. It's going to be different. I mean, that down there is crazy. But the basket's the same size. And if you can, shoot, getting off early is such a big deal. You're just in it. You're bouncing. Do you ever see guys make threes and they do the little three sign, whatever their sign is? They point to their arm, they point to their head, they point to the crowd, whatever, and they get back. Boy, they're in a great defensive stance. After they miss, not so much,
Right. Well, and I'm not even going to say that he was a good defender no matter what, but if you wanted the poster child for, as his offense went, so did the rest of his game, Aguilar at the start of last year, right? I mean,
perfect,
if the ball
example.
Went in, he suddenly was involved. If not, he was off in space somewhere. That's all there is to
right.
it. And,
right.
And I'm not saying everybody is like that. He was a special case, and I do mean that literally and figuratively.
Yes,
but
he was.
There's no question. But the other thing, Jack, and we've talked about this so often, I don't care whether you're talking about Steph Curry or whomever, it's not just the stats. If you've got a guy that the defense has to pay close attention to all the time, and for instance, I don't think Jake came out of the game at all last night. I think he played the full 40, if I'm not mistaken, that the gravitational pull that means the other team has to pay attention to him, that leaves other people open. And that's when you can have somebody like a Douglas shooting. We've talked about it. You can spin the ball around in the NBA until you're comfortable that the Wilson logo is in the right direction for you, right? When you are standing wide open because they're concentrating on other people, number one, it's a blessing. Number two, it can be a curse because if you start to miss those open shots, you start to get down on yourself. And even if your teammates say shoot it, you feel like you shouldn't. But when you have nights like last night where you shoot over 50% from the field and those guys are open, hey, Jack, it's not going to change. They're going to try to take Heidbreder out no matter what happens. Heidbreder is going to be the guy they try to take out. So are these guys going to be open throughout conference the rest of the way?
Well, one thing you have going for you is people are not slumming Wilson Jocks. And usually he's open, which means you can throw the ball into the post and he's competent enough that, you see there are three ways to guard it. One is just to play him straight up, which some people have done. Another is to double him as soon as he gets it. And the third is to double him what they call on the bounce. As soon as he puts the ball down, then you're going to double him. But he's getting more comfortable with it. I think he had 5 assists last night, and he has a couple nice passes that, they don't make shots, which he's done his job. So when you're talking about a guy like Jake or Foss, if he's on, and Douglas, if he's on, you're going to get scouting reports that are going to say, look, you can't leave these guys. You can't give them open shots. You have to pressure them. You have to make them put it on the floor. Well, what that does is, as people say, it opens the floor. It brings the defense away from the basket, and now you can throw the ball inside, and now it's a longer double team wherever it's coming from. You'll notice Nevada was doubling from the top. They had their top guy. I believe Utah State, was doubling from the opposite side, his wide side. And some people double on the pass. The passer goes in, and the defender who's guarding goes right to the ball. Once you're doing that, you're going to get a lot more open looks. Now, the downside is that all of our shooters, unfortunately, are defensive liabilities. And a guy like Jake, if you're playing 35 and 40 minutes, you're going to get tired. At least you're going to get more tired than you are at the beginning of the game.
Right.
And if you notice during the Nevada game, Jake drives to the basket, lays it in, we go up one. They come down, they beat Jake off the dribble, and they go up one. Jake comes down, he makes a layup, and we're up one. And then they come down, and the guy beats him off the dribble again. So it's, you know, you got guys, and Foss is the similar, Douglas because of his, you know, not being fully healed yet. You don't have a guy like Stickman or Gorey, or even Collins, you know, who can stay with a guy for one or two dribbles. You know, good offense beats good defense. Like I said many times, when you're going around, you're seeing kids at a park, you're seeing them pass, you're seeing them dribble, you're seeing them shoot. You don't see anybody practicing defensive slides. You know, so as kids grow up, all they work on is their offensive skills. The only time they get any defense involved is, you know, when you start getting coached. And even coaches, I've noticed that at camps, if you give coaches 5 minutes of practice time, the first thing they do is put in offense. So offense is going to beat defense. It's hard. It's hard. That's why Jake Heidbreder is getting so many good looks at the basket. I mean, because people are coming out. I mean, good looks in terms of layups, because he's just going by guys. And he doesn't blow by guys. You know, I mean, Gorey can explode to the basket. I don't know if you saw, after one of the timeouts, Vance ran a clear-out play for Gorey. And he got the ball at the left elbow and just blew by his guy and laid it in. Jake's not going to blow by guys, but he's smart, and he gets there. He gets to the basket, and he's getting more and more layups. And I guess the more and more of those he gets, you know, people may say, you know what, you're not going to be able to guard him as tight as we thought, and maybe he'll get some more threes. So, you know, we're hoping, or maybe other guys will come over to help, and he can throw it out, and they can get threes. And like you said, if you're getting Foss, who can shoot, and Douglas, who's coming around now, and when Manny gets better, he's a terrific standstill shooter for a guy that big. You know, that's the game Vance wants to play. So, yeah, it's a tough one next time, because that's probably the, you know, that and Utah State are probably the two toughest places to play. You know, you got New Mexico, which is a great home court. Boise is a great home court. You're not going to get too many San Jose's. So, you know, even Air Force is tougher to play than San Jose. But San Diego State, it's a tough call. Although, our guys have shown, you know, like they said, they could be undefeated in the conference right now. You know, a couple good plays here and there, as opposed to bad ones, they could be 4-0.
Well, we know this. When you play San Diego State, no matter where you play them, you have to be patient, because defensively they're going to strangle you literally and figuratively.
Right.
And so
that's very difficult.
Right. And they've actually added a little bit more offense. That's the reason they were able to make it to the NC2A championship game a few years back, because their offense came around. But speaking of offense, last night, this is what I find fascinating, and it's certainly, you can't have a repeat of it on Saturday because it won't work for you. But for Heidbreder to be 2 of 11 in that game, playing the full 40, and the Bulldogs to still win comfortably, tells you other guys had really efficient nights. Douglas, for instance, 4 of 5, including 3 of 4 from three-point land for 13 points, but he played only 14 minutes. That's efficiency and beyond. Right. But the guy I want to bring up is someone that I criticized. You know, I mentioned to you that he was very busy in one of the games, and that was Collins, who had a stat line a couple of games back that had a lot of good and a lot of bad. The 36 minutes that Zion played last night, I mean, if you could bottle this, Vance and the coaching staff would be delighted. I mean, you know, he didn't shoot the ball a ton, but he had a 14-point night. He was 6 of 8 from the field. He didn't have a 3-point shot. He was perfect from the line, but he had 6 rebounds. He had 7 assists and only 3 turnovers and a couple of steals. That was busy and efficient and productive. That's what you want to see from Collins. Again, the blueprint is there, and I know it's a lot easier to be efficient when you're kicking and guys are making shots. But is the maturation there with Collins to the point you're feeling more comfortable with him, Jack, or is it a wait and see as far as a consistent performance from the guy who has the ball in his hands most of the time?
Right. Well, when you hear Vance talk, the thing he emphasizes over and over is we got to take care of the ball. Well, the guy who has the ball, like you said, most of the time is Collins. So he's the guy who has to limit his turnovers, and playing whatever 35, 36 minutes and having three turnovers is pretty good. I mean, you know, you got a guy who has the ball at the beginning of almost every possession. He has the ball. And if you can limit three turnovers in 35, 36 minutes, yeah, that's terrific. That's what you're looking for. And, you know, is that what we can expect? Well, you know, the guy's 23. Yeah, he's played a long time. He played in high school. He played in JC. Played last year. He's playing now. Yeah, the maturation should be there. The leadership should be there. And, you know, I wouldn't expect him to get a ton of points, but he can beat people off the dribble. He's shooting that little floater more instead of trying to get to the basket because he had, you know, too many whatever Spalding or Wilson sandwiches last year. And he's figuring, you know what, I don't have to go all the way to the basket. I can make these little floaters. You said he was 6-for-8 last night without a three, which means he's taking layups and some close range shots. Yeah, that's perfect. That's what you're looking for. And then you get the big game from Gorey, and you know, who had been inconsistent, but then again, he's a freshman. And, you know, you expect consistency from your older guys. And, you know, you expect, you know, inconsistency sometimes from freshmen. Now, back to Jake. Jake didn't shoot well from three, but he is nails at the free throw line. I mean, if you foul him, you might as well just go to the other end, because I don't know when he doesn't miss free throws, especially lately. You know, it's kind of like, you know what, my threes aren't going down like I want. I'm not going to miss any from 15 feet. I mean, I'm going to knock these things down. And, you know, he's getting quiet. He had a quiet 25 against Nevada, I thought. I didn't, you know, when you looked up at the thing, because, you know, at the Save Mart Center, they have the five guys that are in the game. They have their fouls and right. Points. And we looked up, and I was with Danny Robinson, and Danny said, wow, he has 25. I didn't realize it. You know, he's a quiet scorer. He's, like I said, efficient around the basket, and he's going to get some points from the free throw line, and he's going to cash in there. So the team basically is coming around. They do have to get totally healthy. It'd be nice to see them totally healthy and see what you can do with a complete healthy roster. Douglas getting closer and closer to 100%. You know, then, you know, roll it out and see what happens.
Well, again, they've got the game at Viejas. That's a national TV game, CBS Sports Network, 8 o'clock on Saturday night, then back home next Tuesday against Colorado State, and then Wyoming. And Wyoming really kicked the you-know-what out of UNLV. You know, we'll see how this plays out. A couple of things. One, you brought up Jake and the free throws. You're right, although earlier in the year, inexplicably, he missed a couple of throws late in the game. But that, I think, was an aberration. The other thing I wanted to ask you about quickly, Jack, because I do want to address this Williams NIL situation at Washington, because it is, again, the unseemly, the dirty underbelly of what's going on in collegiate sport. But the final question for this particular visit about Bulldog basketball has to do with Makan Juf. And we have mentioned this, that by all accounts, he was the best player not playing prior to last season. And what has happened here? Is it a better roster? And I've asked this before, I ask it again. Is it a better roster around him? Are there greater levels of competition he's playing against? Is he just emotionally lost out there? I know he's not playing a lot of minutes, but he doesn't appear to be the guy that we were being told that he was as far as his ability to be an impact player. What is the situation right now with Makan?
I know that Vance is trying to ease him in there, especially with you know, Manny being out and, you know, the big guy, you know, from Slovenia being out yesterday, G, as Vance calls him. You know, he got some time. He got the ball inside one time and bunny hopped, which is, you know, uncharacteristic. But he did block a shot, and he's a presence. And I noticed that Vance played him yesterday, played both big guys at the same time. And defensively, that's going to help you. his offensive game has to come around. I think, yeah, you're right. It's a better roster around him. That's true. And I think, yeah, better competition than the red-white scrimmage that he had last year. And the guys he was practicing against last year when he was sitting out. But, yeah, he's a big key. I think if you can ever get him back to what we thought he might be, wow, you're talking about a 6'11 guy who can handle the ball on the perimeter, but is you're going to be far and away your best shot blocker. Because Wilson, you know, God bless him, can't jump over the B. Yeah, and he can't jump over the Saturday version of the B, and as you know, they don't have one on Saturday. Vance has even said he can't jump an inch off the ground, but everything else he does exactly, you know, he works hard, he gives you everything he has. He's a rebounding machine because he's so tall and so big, sets great screens. If you can combine him with McCann, now you got a guy who's thin, but he's going to block shots, can jump. I mean, he blocked one yesterday, looked like, you know, hey, this is exactly what we need. Yeah, he's I think, a key ingredient to this team. Yeah.
Well, we'll see how it plays out. Again, Saturday ought to be very interesting. They played more than respectably against Utah State at home. Couldn't get it done. If they can play competitively at San Diego State, they'll have some momentum coming back home for Colorado State next Tuesday. All right, Jack, before I let you go, I always want to ask you about the bigger world of college athletics, and that usually the old Meyer line involves money. But this situation with Damon Williams at Washington, and this is when you and I talked start of NIL about somewhat tongue-in-cheek about the kind of deals we would see. I didn't know we would see these seven-figure deals become the norm so quickly. But
yep.
Williams had signed a contract to return to Washington, to UW, to the Huskies last week. The deal, Pete Thamel of ESPN reported, was somewhere in the mid-$4 million range, which is near the top of the market. Then all of a sudden, evidently LSU comes calling. What a surprise. Because, geez, hey, who is the coach going to be there, Jack?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. LSU comes calling, and suddenly you have Williams saying, well, you know what? Yeah, I know I made the commitment, but I'm not honoring it. I need to look out to my own best interest, so I'm not going to honor that. I'm going to enter the portal. And now the University of Washington has said they're going to pursue all legal avenues. And they're saying, according to the contract itself, they're not obligated to enter Williams into the portal or otherwise assist or facilitate the student athlete's transfer to another college or university. Meaning what they're saying is, we made you an offer. You accepted it. Now you're saying you want to go somewhere else to be paid even more money. And we are simply put not going to let you go. Now, Jack, I'm going to ask you in two different areas of this. One, if you are the coach or the administrators at Washington, do you want a guy there who doesn't want to be there, number one? And number two, do you feel as though this is absolute part and parcel of what we're going to see, or is this an aberration? Because this is about as ugly as it gets, and it's one of the things you cannot do in professional sport, right?
Yeah, well, didn't this happen already with the kid from Georgia?
We saw what happened in Florida and Georgia as well.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Now, this kid, see, when you talk about administrators and coaches, you have to separate them. You know, I remember Al Bowl telling me one time that I could be an athletic director. You know, Jack, you know, if you work in this thing, you could be an athletic director someday. I said, Al, do you really think I want to go to a women's soccer match in the rain and make believe I care who wins? I said, you think coaches are at this level and athletic directors are a level higher. You're right, but they're not in the same world. Coaches are not, you know, coaches used to aspire to be athletic directors. Now you have to get business guys because the athletic director's job is to balance the budget. So when you ask from an administrator's point of view, do you want this guy on a team? Absolutely not. From a coach's standpoint, do you want the guy on the team? You know what? he might not want to be here now, but, you know, if the kid from Cincinnati decided not to go to Texas Tech and he said to LSU, I have second thoughts, I want to come, they would cut that kid from Washington loose in a hurry. I mean, that's exactly what happened last year when the kid from Appalachian State went to UCLA, and then Nico Iamalava from Tennessee, his father said, you know, that what's-his-name from Georgia transferred to Miami, and he's getting $3 million. My kid's only getting 2.4. I want to renegotiate. And Tennessee said, get lost. We don't want you. So he went to UCLA. As soon as he went to UCLA, Aguilar from Appalachian State, who had gone to UCLA, I said before, he wasn't at UCLA long enough to go to Disneyland. He left and went to Tennessee. So this is, you know, if that's what's going to happen, look, you know, guys are going to try to do. When you say I want to do what's best for my family, you mean $4 million isn't enough for your family? What kind of family do you have? Who do you live with? The Rothschilds?
Well, the 14. The old mad strangler there for the Warriors who strangled PJ Carlissimo, saying, you know, it's tough to live on $14 million a year. You remember that one? But
yeah,
Jack,
right,
look, you know,
right.
when you talk about the Lucas situation, which you're referencing the Wisconsin to Miami situation, I believe you are.
Right, yeah.
The Big Ten, you know, they were vocal in supporting Wisconsin, saying, yeah, let's sue. Let's keep make sure he has to honor the contract. But I want to go back to the other issue. We saw, you know, the kid from the Bay Area, of course, that was at Florida, who didn't have his contract honored, right, and ended up traveling across the country, and itinerant athlete.
Sure.
Or I was mentioning that the other day in the Rose Bowl, you had somebody who was making his fourth P4 stop in 4 years because he'd been chasing the money. Now, one more time, if that's the best money you're going to get and you're not going to see the National Football League and you're not Mendoza or somebody, then okay, yeah, maybe it is looking out for your best interest and your family's best interest. But I question whether – I know why you don't want anybody to just take off to a better deal when they have contractually agreed to something with you. But, Jack, I do want to come back to this point. At the collegiate level, the professional level – everybody tells you the same thing, right? It's a business. Everybody better figure out it's a business. Jimmy Butler talking the other day about this weird Kuminga situation that you and I've talked about with the Warriors a million times.
Yeah.
Nobody seems to understand what's going on, except the owner wants Kuminga to stay, and neither Kuminga nor the Warriors management around the team itself really wants him to stay, but the owner takes all pushes, right? But Jimmy Butler basically said... Well, you know, and Jimmy Butler said, hey, you know, he's my guy, whether he's here or somewhere else, but he's got to know, and he already has figured it out because he's been in the league 4 years. It's a business. That's what it is, and you accept that fact. You know, Draymond was saying if he gets traded, it's because it's a business, all right?
Yeah.
Are we at a point that a kid from 18 to 22 years old who can bleep his life up in 20 different directions, particularly with bad advice, that – it is so cold and hard fast that now collegiate sport is just that. It's just a damned business. That's all there is to it. There is no room for I'm unhappy, or there's no room for we don't want this kid to be a disruption. Is this the National Football League all over again now?
Sure. That's exactly what it is. It's just short term because, you know, you can't sign a 10-year contract to play in college. Although if the NCAA has their way, maybe you will. Guys are starting to play 6 years, but it's definitely a business, mainly because there's no educational aspect to any of this. It's not even, you know, people say you got to be eligible. I've never heard of one guy who hasn't, you know, we wanted to sign this guy, but he's ineligible. Nobody's ever in it. People, like you said, four schools in 4 years. We had the guy when Hutt was here, Moore, I think his name was, he was in his fifth school in 5 years. That's what guys are doing. And it's sad because guys are down the road, they're not going to have the friendships that you make in college, and they're not going to have a degree, which it seems like is important. It used to be the reason you went to college was to get a degree and to get a better job. Now, the reason you're going to college as an athlete is to try to get as much money as you can, because, like you said, such a small percentage, you're going to make money professionally, so try to get it now while you can. But when you see a guy who gets a $4 million offer and says, you know what, that might not be enough, or a guy's father who said, oh, my kid's getting 2.4, but this other guy, I think he's better than, and he's getting more, so I want to renegotiate. Whoever renegotiates at college, you're supposed to be in college to go to class. Even Mendoza said, I got my degree from Cal, now I'm taking all my classes online, and it gives me so much time to watch video. He said, it was, I do this when I can, and maybe if I'm having lunch. While I'm eating, I knock a couple courses out. The academics is gone, and if the academics is gone, it becomes a business. Yes, that's what it is, a business.
I'm glad you brought up, I'll let you go with this. I'm glad you brought up Mendoza, because this is one smart kid, because he was at Cal first, and he said, you know what? Thinking about that degree, I'm getting that degree from one of the great academic institutions in the land. Then I'll worry about how much money I can make playing the game in Indiana after that. Jack, one final question about this, and I had an email about it for years, and I meant it at the time, and in the context, if we went back to that time, I still would feel the same way. I had said that it was much more fair game to criticize professional athletes for their performance or lack thereof than a collegiate athlete because they are not living the same life. Okay, it's a small percentage of collegiate athletes that are living the life right now, but it is also that small percentage within you will find the difference makers. That's why they're making the money. So it's not fair to say, well, it's a small percentage, when that small percentage, generally speaking, are the ones that are deciding winning and losing. Have we reached a point where we should be able, and we not only should be able to, but we're obligated to criticize the collegiate athlete just as much as we criticize the professional athlete? Have we gotten to that point because of the money?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, if a guy goes out and has a terrible game, especially if you're the donor, we gave $1 million to that guy and he just went 3-for-15 and we lost to a team that we should beat. And maybe we won't go to the NCAA tournament, or maybe we won't go to the college football playoffs. What are you supposed to sit back and say, wow, he's just a college kid?
Did you do that publicly, Jeff?
Once you're getting paid, to do a job. And the job you're getting paid to do is help your team win. So if you're not helping your team win, I mean, it's to the point now, you got NBA guys sitting on the bench making $2 million, not playing at all. Well,
right. That's the NBA. Jack, we're out of time, but I want to ask you this. Look, to be continued, but when you were assisting with Tark, when you were the director of basketball operations, you were coming on the air with me after games. If we would have had the same context and you would have made that comment, what would the reaction have been afterward back around the team? If you would have said, you know what, we're paying this guy $2 million and he bricked 8 out of 10 from the line and he didn't earn his money tonight and he let us down and he cost us the NCAA, what would Tark's reaction have been if you did that publicly?
Oh, Tark always criticized in private and praised in public. That's why he had decent leadership skills. He would criticize, the team, and he would praise the individual. I mean, I told you one time he even said, Melvin, if I had 12 guys like you, I'd work for free. If I had 12 some of you other guys, they'd have to pay me double. Now, he never said anybody's name, but those guys knew. Yeah. They knew who he was talking about. Tony, Kentucky's payroll in basketball is $22 million. That means their guys on the bench getting money, not playing. That's crazy.
That is a fair comment. That's absolutely fair. Jack, appreciate it. Hope people, again, give you a call, 559-287-3305, FertyJackOL.com. Join the Time Out Club. Talk to you next week, my friend. Good luck with the surgery. I certainly need a lot of them. Good luck to you. I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, guys. Jack Furtick, take a break, come back, tell you about the schedule, hand it off to Philly as the full 3 hours. And then speaking of high-priced guys, the Lakers and the Spurs will be up at 6:15 tonight. Take a break. Bulldog Hour continues on this Wednesday on Central Valley Sports Leader, 1430 ESPN. Welcome back, 2:54. A couple minutes ago on the show, hand it off to Philly's fine show behind the bench, the full 3 hours today. Then shortly after he wraps it up at 6, about 15 minutes after that, the Lakers and the Spurs, a late start in San Antonio tonight because it's the back end of a doubleheader on ESPN television. We'll have the Laker broadcast for you. They'll tip it off at 8:40 the Central Time, 6:40 our time of the 6:15 pre. We'll see. Like I said, it's back-to-back nights for both the Lakers and the Spurs, and we'll see if Wemby plays for San Antonio, and I assume that LeBron and Luka will play for the Lakers, but one never knows on a night-to-night basis in the NBA. Ask the people that showed up to watch the Warriors the other night, and nobody was playing for the Warriors, and the Thunder ran them right out of Chase Center. Anyway, schedule's coming up for both 1430 and 790. Very busy, and it's brought to you our news about the schedule by our good friend Ed Dunkel and his great business, Precision Civil Engineering, Planning, Land Surveying, Civil Engineering, Landscape Architecture, Construction Management, all there under one roof, 449-4500 or precisieneng.net for more information. And we commend Ed for the great fundraising he does for the alma mater, Fresno State, and the Lyles College of Engineering on campus, where he gets a lot of his engineers. Always the goal to unify athletics and academics to provide more funding resources to students. It's worked out beautifully over the years, and we thank Ed for his support of the Valley and Fresno State, of course. Now, as far as the schedule goes, tonight, Lakers 6:15 on 1430, over on 790, the Sharks and the Kings tonight at 7. Paul Meadows normally has Sunbird Sports Show, not on this particular Wednesday, but he'll be with us on Saturday for his show on 1430, the long-running show, Central Valley Sports Report, 10 a.m. to noon from First String Sports. Phil, usually 3 to 6, moves around a little bit because of play-by-play, his great show behind the bench, including Thursdays at Fashion Furniture with our good friend Rod Avedikian, best furniture on the planet, nothing like it in all of California. The great conversation of Phil's show and some good eats as well. El Paso across from River Park. Stop on in and see him or give him a call on the Lee's Air Hotline, which is 559-320-1430. We are with you at 2 o'clock each and every weekday. You can reach me, TDAD1 at ATT.net, TDAD, the number one at ATT.net. As I mentioned, not really in a position because of all the physical issues right now to get back to you privately, but send in the emails. I'm reading them, and I'll get to them as quickly as I can on air. Other reminders, everything for the station, 1430 ESPN, Fresno.com. You'll get the live links and podcast there, so check that out. Also, for us, beyond tonight, a very, very busy and meaningful 5 days with 8 football games, all of them loser leaves the playground games, starting tomorrow when we have the 2 national semifinals for the NC2As from ESPN Radio, 4 o'clock. The pregames, 4:30, they'll kick it off as the Oregon and Indiana game will be the feature game on Friday, and we'll start, of course, with Ole Miss and Miami first on Thursday. And then over the weekend from Westwood One, all 6 of the NFL games, 2 on Saturday, including the Rams at Carolina, that's the early game, and then the Packers and the Bears, the late game on Sunday, the Bills in the morning, the 49ers, actually, I think it might be the Jags in the morning, but also you have got the 49ers at 1:30, and you've got New England playing a little bit later on in the day, and then you have got the Pittsburgh matchup on Monday. That is that Monday night game that they've done the last few years, so the wild card stretches across the weekend, so you end up with us with 6 games for you. And that includes the 49ers and the Rams. It will be the national network. It will not be the local broadcast. And let me clarify again, on Sunday, you have got the late game being the Chargers and the Patriots. The Bills and the Jags will play the early game. And then, as I mentioned, the Texans and the Steelers will play on Monday. So you've got a breakdown then of playoff through ESPN Radio for the colleges tomorrow and Friday at 4 o'clock. And then over the weekend, you'll find the doubleheader on Saturday, the tripleheader on Sunday, and the final game on Monday, that cluster of eight games, and then we'll be around to talk about it next week. And then the final reminder tonight at 6:30 at SMC, the Fresno State women will be playing San Jose State, and Matt Norville will start his weekly visits with me tomorrow. Matt, the voice of the women's program. So we'll talk both men's and women's basketball with Matt tomorrow. Thanks to Jorge. Thanks to Jack Furtig. Bill, it's coming up the full 3 hours. Then the Lakers, Sharks on 790. See you tomorrow on KFIG Fresno.